my dear friend, you had excellencies, ladies and gentlemen. By the way, thank you so much for your kind words. It's difficult to be, advocated so passionately in my country. Nowadays, the government is under severe criticism, so it's always a good decision to go, in some foreign country to get some compliments. thank you very much for your hospitality. I've never been here before. It's a beautiful, beautiful monastery. We had also a privilege to take some couple of minutes of Mass, and rightly so, because I will mention a God in my speech. So, I will address, if you don't mind, the principal issue of this conference, and this is regional politics and world politics. Friends and colleagues, in my view, the modern world finds itself at a fork in the path. Its future is less predictable than would ideally be the case. In essence, in my view, there are two possible paths that can be taken. The very first one leads to the peaceful resolution of disputes, the enhancement of dialogue and trust, the consolidation of effective mechanisms for the necessary functioning of the global market economy, a transition to a new model of sustainable development, and a successful way out of the world's economic, political, and security problems. Well, there is also the second way. It leads to the uncontrolled escalation of security issues, increasing mistrust and enhanced prejudice, nationalism, the abuse of religious and other sentiments for the purposes of achieving extreme political goals, a further widening of the gap between the rich and the poor, and deepening mistrust of national and international political decision makers. I really don't know which path we will take. Like you, I can only guess. In this context, an obvious question arises. Is my conclusion that the modern world finds itself in a rather unusual situation correct? And are there, in fact, only two ways to be taken? But even if we stick with this presumption, it is nevertheless, at this moment, still up to us, in view of our historical experience, that we, as the leaders of nations and states, attempt to fathom the course of change in order to successfully promote or further. In my opinion, the problems of the modern world have intensified to the dangerous level. Economic, social, moral, and security problems have intensified, and if we consider the history of the modern international community, then these are circumstances which have often led to the use of force of broader dimensions. The fundamental question, ladies and gentlemen, is whether, by applying the existing instruments of international policy dialogue, by implementing crisis mechanism, and by making efforts to settle disputes in a peaceful way. The modern international community is capable of overcoming this intensification without provoking serious conflict. I am of the view that we are only at the initial stage of the intensification of these problems, but that this will increase further and take on wider dimensions. Some of you, my dear friend, some might say that my view of the future is rather pessimistic. Well, I will risk being self-confident in my assessment, and I will stick with my opinion that this is a realistic view on the possible future. To be honest, my awareness on this has not just developed over recent months, but over recent years. And this reflection has had a substantial influence on the decision I have taken on foreign policy matters and domestic political challenges in my role as the Slovenian Prime Minister. If I had judged things in a more simple, in a more uncomplicated manner, I would not have tackled such a sensitive, such an emotional issue as the resolution of the border dispute with Croatia at the very start of my term of office. You know, I've taken the office of Prime Minister in late 2008. As you know, the recession started right at that time. It would be obvious that somebody in my place would immediately start with fiscal stimulus and other economic measures to tackle the financial and then economic and then social crisis. And we've done this job, but I considered the whole picture in front of me, and I decided not to be understood by the whole public at that time that because of my judgment, what is going on and what could happen after the economic and financial crisis, it is extremely important for my country and for our friends on the other side in Croatia to try and to find out a solution. Because, as you know, at the very first moment in 2008 and then in the first half of 2009, Slovenia has blocked Croatia on its way to European Union. And you can imagine the hostile environment between not just two political leadership, but also between two nations, and not only in terms of political issue and economic issue, but also on the human level. So the resolution of this issue, as I said, began at a time when trust between two nations and countries was an all-time low. I've been in politics for 20 years, before and after the independence of both countries, but I've never observed such a low trust between two nations and to a political leadership. The entire process, which was finalized by the signing of the International Arbitration Agreement back in November 2009, I think, back in Stockholm, Sweden, was perhaps ultimately so successful precisely because we were all aware of the fact that there was no real alternative. At least there was no peaceful alternative, and certainly no safe option. So I would like to say thanks to God, and especially to our people who confirmed this view in the referendum exactly a year ago, we succeeded. This achievement has had a very, very positive impact on developments throughout Southeast Europe. On a joint initiative by the Croatian Madam Prime Minister Kosor and me, the border process has been launched. The aim of this process is that any political and other issues that might arise during the course of relations between nation and states in this part of Europe are resolved before they escalate into security issue. Before would escalate into a security issue. Just 1 month ago, the Berlin process witnessed a, in my view, a turning point when the ministers of justice from all countries of Southeast Europe, from Slovenia, Croatia, Serbia, Bosnia, Kosovo, Macedonia, throughout to Albania, sat down at the same table for the very first time. I mean, you know, this dialogue between Belgrade and Pristina, it is a huge achievement. Now we are witnessing this dialogue between two capitals, trying to avoid at the very first stage the most difficult questions. And I think they are doing a very important homework, which is not necessarily important just for the relations between Belgrade and Pristina, but also for a peace, security, and welfare of the whole region. And this is, I mean, the inspiration of the Berlin process, that the process that has been inspired by the resolution of the dispute between Slovenia and Croatia a couple of years ago. At that time, the visa liberalization had come into effect, and some countries had made progress in moving closer to EU membership, but certain countries, such as Macedonia, were unable to agree on a compromise solution with their neighboring country. Others, such as Bosnia, are still trapped in internal political deadlock. By mentioning the circumstances in a particular region, on Western Balkans, ladies and gentlemen, I wanted to illustrate how a determined political will for the peaceful solution of disputes and a really strong, honest desire for progress can, certainly to a certain extent, alter the course of the future, and how, on the other hand, a lack of political will is, to a certain extent, capable of frustrating its course. At this point, I'm faced with the question as to whether this experience, also personal experience, can be conveyed further to the international community. Hardly. Nevertheless, I am convinced that it is not possible to say that we can fully influence the course of history. But what we can do is to influence the present and the future insofar as this is in our power, in the power of our political will. And this is our responsibility, not just to our people, as prime ministers and vice prime ministers, to people that we represent, but also myself as a member of European Council, as you referred to, to be responsible to half a billion Europeans. And we, as Europe, we have certain responsibility in the international community. And that is, let us face it. So we have to take this burden of responsibility. We have to know that, to a certain extent, it is up to us where the future will go, or one way or the other way. If the world's policymakers and elites decide to take responsible, reasonable decisions early enough and advocate dialogue for benefit of peace and justice, then I can see a possibility that the world will take the very first path, the path of peace and progress. However, regretfully, maybe this will not be the case, and we will live in a world that is less safe than we would have wanted for our children. Let me, however, finally emphasize that by adhering as much as possible to our potential political will, we must strive for the peaceful resolution of issues. We have worked hardly for international dialogue and tolerance, and to overcome the economic and social problems in a manner which will, by evading the rocky waters of the crisis, and there is no end to the economic crisis, not be too much optimistic too soon. By evading the rocky waters of the crisis, help us to rescue the majority of society, not just the privileged elites. Let us bear the following in mind. In 1964, Lyndon B. Johnson won the president elections with a vast majority, as you know. With his concept of, you maybe do remember, with a concept of so-called great society. Great society. What an inspiration. Landslide victory. No war. Let us take care about us and the world in a positive way. Great society. Unfortunately, the same president, he then had to abandon the idea due to the United States war in Vietnam. The most tragic aspect of this is that while sending an increasing number of American troops to Asian soil, year after year, at the same time, he kept asking himself why the Vietnamese would not yield, because with the money he was diverting to the war effort, he could have built enough schools, kindergartens, and hospitals to enable the idea of so-called great society also prosper on Asian soil. And you know, at the end of his term, he announced he would not run once again for the office of the president. However, the power's inertia was strong than these humble wishes, and only years later did, as you know, Nixon put an end to the war. So, ladies and gentlemen, my dear friend and colleagues, together with you here today, I ask myself whether we have learned enough from history in order to provide for a peaceful future that we are working for us and for our children all over the Europe. Of course, you know, peace is not everything. But little can be achieved without it. So, as much as it depends on our political will, I think it's fair to say in this excellent conference here in Australia, as much as it depends on our political will, it is our moral obligation and our political responsibility to try sincerely and heartily to work for it. Thank you so much.